Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here. Right now, get up to 80% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, seasonal decor, and way more. All at Wayfair. These are Wayfair's best deals of the year. From seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, enjoy fast and free shipping with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 80% off during Wayfair's Black Friday sale. Now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Welcome into Texans on Tap. I'm Brandon Strange alongside Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan. Go follow them on X at Polillo and at Josh Jordan SCS. On today's episode, how can an already embattled 3-5 Texans team scratch out a win against their 5-3 division foe Jacksonville with their quarterback and kicker sidelined? Your guess is probably as good as Nick Cayley's, and I'm only partially kidding on that. If you're watching this and you're not an NFL GM, you made as many trades as Nick Caserio did at the deadline this week. And we reprised the segment Sweeping the Nation on this week's edition of D'Amico Said What? Charlie, Josh, welcome in. It has been a long, ugly season so far for Houston, and fittingly, the injury report is also long and ugly. Before we get into Houston's tall task ahead of them on Sunday, I have to start here. Give me your reactions to the Texans' inaction at the deadline. Charlie, what say ye?
Well, let me match the general manager's activity. Okay, for those only consuming via audio, don't adjust your dial. The Indianapolis Colts go get Sauce Gardner. The Jaguars get a solid wide receiver to come run routes against the Texans this Sunday. Nick Caserio, I'm hearing, got in a doozy of a round of golf on Tuesday. It was putt-putt, but take what you can. I'm not going to lambaste Caserio for it. I'm sure he'll offer up gobbledygook for on the pregame or whatever that hey, we like what we have. Well, that would be part of the problem then. The ship is sinking, the 2025 ship. So don't be a cat chasing its tail and go give up some of their ample draft capital for 2026. I mean, you know, they're two players away on offense. Well, if CJ Stroud were healthy, from maybe being able to make a big run. But those two guys would be prime Mike Munchak and Bruce Matthews, Oilers for you youngins, to bolster the offensive line. I mean, they're stuck. And it's a real bummer that we're still 3 weeks out from Thanksgiving, but the season is functionally over if they don't beat the Jaguars on Sunday. I mean, Quinton Williams is a very good football player, but Jerry Jones giving up a 1 and a 2 for a lineman now closer to 30 than to 25. At least we can give Caserio credit for not being delusional and thinking the Texans were one bold move away, because they're not.
They're not. And I can't say I was surprised, because D'Amico kept getting peppered with questions leading up to the trade deadline. Oh, what are you guys thinking about? Are you interested in making moves? Is there somewhere you can improve the team? Every time D'Amico's like, I haven't even thought about it. I'm too worried about this week. You know, we'll worry about that when it's time to worry about it. So clearly it wasn't a big priority for him. And finding an offensive lineman, a good one, at the trade deadline is really hard to do. Teams aren't giving those guys away, especially not unless tremendous capital will be coming back in the draft. So it doesn't surprise me that much. I would have liked to have seen something. Breece Hall would have been great, but I don't know if I want to give up a third-round pick for just to rent him for the rest of the year. Of course, you have the possibility that you could re-sign him, but you know, guys do like to hit free agency. I guess maybe the franchise tag too. But anyway, it just doesn't make sense right now for them to do it. Charlie hit on it. They're in a position where, I mean, there's no more wiggle room. They have to win all the winnable games. And then they're also going to have to maybe knock off the Chiefs or the Bills, or they play the Colts a couple times. So just the likelihood of them pulling that off, when we've seen what the offenses look like all year, even with CJ. So I'm disappointed. I would like to have seen something, because the Jags got better, the Colts got better, but it might be time to start worrying about next year, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, what hole is Breece Hall going to run through? I mean, that's the real question. Is, even if you had Joe Mixon on this team, like as magical he was at times, this offensive line's worse, and the play calling is visibly worse. Yeah. They're not a piece away, so they shouldn't go overpay to try to patchwork. But that's when you're supposed to address it in the draft. And the O-line didn't get addressed in the draft either. So I just, like, at what point does the O-line get addressed?
Well, Caserio has consistently addressed. It's just been the wrong address time and time again, right? Four consecutive drafts in offensive linemen, first or second round. The free agent moves, one journeyman after another, Ed Ingram's Pro Football Focus grade, notwithstanding, but Cam Robinson, Laken Tomlinson. Until it gets better, Nick Caserio's epitaph, Kenyon Green, Juice Scruggs. I mean, Blake Fisher, when they're in 6-0 lineman package, okay, there's his little niche. And obviously still very early on Ariante Ursary, but that is Caserio's doom if it gets to where they're going to change a general manager, executive vice president of football operations.
Yeah, for him to only throw one draft pick at the offensive line with Ursary, that didn't make a lot of sense to me. Draft evaluators know it's not necessarily the high picks. You want as many picks as possible because you never know who's going to work out. And for them to only take one swing at the offensive line, I thought it was very strange.
But you signed Cam Robinson and Trent Brown.
Yeah.
With Tomlinson and Ingram. Just a colossal failure by Caserio in a vital position group.
Yeah, well, hopefully Brown and Robinson can contribute this week. So speaking of the discombobulation that's happening on Kirby, this week when asked about his team's insistence on trying unsuccessfully to power the way into the end zone on consecutive goal line plays, D'Amico turned it around on the media. And said, well, when we run the ball on the goal line, you say we should throw it. If we throw it, you say we should run it. I approach the game from a physical mindset of, hey, you're on the 1 yard line. We got to knock somebody back and get in the end zone. That's how I approach it. And that's how I've always approached it. And when we do get in the end zone on fourth down, we got a false start. It's a physical mindset. We got to knock somebody off the ball to get 1 yard. So we've been saying, I was very outspoken about it on the post-game show about how Nick Caley seems out of touch, having feel for the game, situational play calling, and understanding who his personnel is. That quote makes it sound like D'Amico doesn't understand who his personnel is. So I know D'Amico is a very smart football mind and was a very good player. He was also a very good teammate. So I wonder, is this a case of D'Amico not understanding his personnel, or is this D'Amico being a good coach and laying cover fire for his struggling OC?
I might lean more toward the latter there. I do think, though, it's the aggressive, violent sport of all our sports, especially for defensive players. I think the DNA mentality is tough, hard-nosed. I mean, it's a football axiom. If you can't get half a yard when you really need it, well, that defines the Houston Texans offense, certainly in that sequence on Sunday. I said, mostly kidding, that maybe Ursary took the false start as a bailout to at least get them the field goal. Little did we know they were going to wear out their kicker by going for nothing but field goals during the course of the game. Strategically, it was dumb, especially running the same soft spot of your offensive line over and over and over. But it's fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. They were fooled three times and may well have been going for four.
Yeah, I'll start with D'Amico first. It's in that same interview, Brandon, he was asked about the red zone struggles and the goal line struggles. And he was like, yeah, clearly, we got to do something different. We're terrible at it. We can't keep doing the same thing because it's not working. And then later on, when he was asked about it again, he gave the response that you just talked about being physical and we got to knock guys off the ball and all that BS. And this is making me think that this is D'Amico telling Caley in these goal line situations what to do. I don't think he's necessarily calling the play, but I think he's telling him run it here or throw it here. And I just, clearly that is not working. They have to find something else. I think of that Ravens game where you had that little fake pitch play and then you threw it to Jalen Knoll for the touchdown. That was a nice creative little play around the goal line. Where was that? And Sean Payton said after the game, we knew the strength of our team was our defensive line and the weakness of their team was the offensive line. So Sean Payton knew what was up and what matchups were good ones for him and otherwise. And it just doesn't seem like the Texans know who they are and realize what they're dealing with. And I pulled some stats here. Texans in red zone situations, 32nd. They're dead last in the NFL. In goal-to-goal situations, 31st. And what's funny is on the defense, they're tied for 26th in red zone and then tied for last – tied for last in goal-to-go at 100%. So it's not just an offensive problem. Texans seem to struggle in these goal line and red zone scenarios on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, the defense just doesn't let opponents get down that close that often. That's right. Why they lead the league in fewest points allowed. The offense, once a year, I like to invoke the great philosopher Ty Webb, Caddyshack. You're not good. That's the Texans' offensive line. That's the Texans' offensive play calling. That's the Texans' offense.
I think it's a combination of things for D'Amico. I do think he's partially covering for Kaylee because, like you said, he had already answered kind of the opposite of that.
Yep.
But I also think there's another element in here, which is we're starting to see a continuing theme of D'Amico in animus towards certain members of the media. I think certain people are starting to rub him the wrong way. And so I do think that may have been part of the contention or the contentious tone that we're starting to hear. It's not reaching Bill O'Brien levels yet. Which, by the way, he had another classic moment this week as well. But I do think there's an element of it to where I think D'Amico's starting to get bristly towards some of the media asking him some of these questions. For coaches and players, I always say they don't listen to the noise, but it sure seems like D'Amico's starting to hear it. So let's talk about the offense. So as we mentioned, no Stroud, no Fairbairn. Also on the injury report this week, Braxton Berrios, Nick Chubb, Titus Howard, Dalton Schultz, Harrison Bryant. I mean, they're going to be suiting up Toro, I think, at some point here. But what chance do you guys give Davis Mills and company to put up points against the Jags D?
Oh, boy. Well, I'll give them this. Coming off facing a Broncos team that had 9 sacks opening day against the Titans and 36 sacks through 8 games, and then 4 in the first half against the Texans. The Jaguars have 10 sacks all season. Josh Hines-Allen, I mean, he's been an excellent pass rusher over his time in the league. He has 2 sacks. 1.5 of those came last Sunday against the Raiders, so maybe he's finding his stride just in time to get after the not-so-elusive, not-so-well-protected Davis Mills. But Jacksonville's defense is not all that. Just from the curiosity component, I'm disappointed that Travis Hunter's out hurt. He'd been kind of underwhelming, certainly for all the Jaguars gave up for him. And he is a smallish guy. I'd be concerned about his durability. Absolutely so as a full-timer or anywhere close to it, both sides of the ball. But they won't have him, their supposed number one cornerback, to deal with. I'm going to say that Nico Collins catches more balls than he did in the second half against the Broncos. I just don't see much reason to think the Texans are going to run it effectively, Chubb, no Chubb, against just about anybody. So, Davis Mills is the quarterback. Why would anyone think they're going to have a big-time day offensively?
Right. And here's the other thing to think about. So when they played the Jags with C.J. Stroud, they only managed to get 10 points. They only had one touchdown in that game. And
it was a total bust. Remember Nico Collins, hey, all alone up the left side because Jacksonville just completely blew its coverage.
Yeah, 50-yard bomb to Nico. And that was pretty much it. You talked about the run game, Charlie. Maybe they have to try and, I think, lean on that a little more because Davis Mills is your quarterback here. The good news is that between Chubb and Marks in this first matchup, they rushed for over 4 yards a carry. It's just they only ran the ball 15 times. They maybe got away from it a little bit too much there. And now with Chubb, we'll see if he's able to go. I'm concerned. Was Woody Marks going to get an uptick in playing time if Chubb's not available? I'm not so sure because we keep seeing Dare Agumbawale get him off the field on third down. So you wonder what they're going to do there. Maybe Damian Pierce gets elevated for this game. If that happens with Chubb, we'll have to see as the week progresses. But that's where I'm kind of looking. I think they're going to have big trouble moving the ball. And then normally I'd make a joke about Fairbairn, but he's basically your best offensive player. Not having him for this game could be a really big deal. You saw how many times they had to run him out there last week.
On the other side of the ball, defense also not in great shape with Petrie, Will Anderson Jr., and Danico Autry on the injury report as well. I think even in the absence of those guys, this defense can still be good against the Jags. Clearly Vegas does too, because the total is so low. But can they do enough to keep Trevor Lawrence and new ad Jacoby Myers quiet on Sunday?
I think they can. To win the game, they may have to go beyond that. I almost feel like the defense has to score for the Texans to feel real good about their chances of winning the game. I've just never been a huge Trevor Lawrence guy, and he's playing down to my level of faith in him. Not completing 60% of his passes, 9 touchdowns thrown, 6 interceptions. Travis Etienne's a solid back. He's at 5 yards per carry. Texans limited him pretty well, 16 for, I think, 56 yards in the game in Jacksonville. Watched Jacoby Myers catch 9 balls for 92 yards and a touchdown Sunday. Good pickup from the Raiders as a stable veteran guy. I'm sure delighted to escape the Raiders' dead in the water season to go to playoff contending Jacksonville at 5-3. And the other guy, if it's Murphy's Law for the Texans, Brian Thomas, spectacular rookie season. Another one of those LSU machine wide receiver products. He's had a bad sophomore season. Leads the NFL in drops. A little bit of a loss of faith in him. But it's not like he's lost his speed. I mean, he's 23 years old. So he's certainly a weapon to be dealt with. But Jacksonville's offense, you know, Liam Cohen, the head coach they hired away from the Buccaneers, changed the culture, this and that. Their offense is in the bottom third of the league in scoring points. So it's not like, oh, the light bulbs come on for Trevor Lawrence. He's now playing like the guy who was the number one overall pick in the draft. The Texans defense is absolutely better than the Jaguars offense, and damn well better be by a good margin in this game.
They are fantastic. I had a stat here for the lowest completion percentage in a win this year. And yeah, 3 out of the top 6 are Texans defenses, where you had Bo Nix last week, Trevor Lawrence the first time around at 50%, and then Sam Darnold was only at about 55%. So even when the Texans do a great job, and sometimes a historically great job, they still just can't pull it out. And I think with Jacoby Myers, he could be an issue, especially in the slot. If Petrie's not going to be able to go, we'll see. But if that could be tough in the slot there, because remember Jalen Smith, their other corner they brought back last week, they drafted out of USC, he's on IR now. So Texans are all of a sudden behind Lassiter and Stingley, a little thin at corner. So that'll be something to watch. I think with Brian Thomas Jr., they might catch a break this week because he missed practice on Wednesday with an ankle. It's supposed to be a low-grade high ankle sprain, for whatever that means. So he may be able to go, but I would not expect him to be totally at full strength if he does play.
No Fairbairn for the Texans. Matthew Wright, the temp kicker, knocked around the league a little bit. The Jaguars are bringing a healthy kicker. And off what a guy has done in an NFL game, hey, if they get to midfield, they're in field goal range. 68-yard field goal for Cam Little last week. New NFL record by 2 yards. He had a 70-yarder in preseason. So this guy is a super toe to rival Brandon Aubrey with the Cowboys.
Yeah, and if it comes down to a field goal fest, which it may very well be, they're Texans need to hope that Danico Mutombo Autry is healthy enough to bat down some more balls, because he showed a propensity to do that. So good for him. Texans at home, 1.5-point dogs, total being a measly 37.5 points. Oof, I think, Josh, you said that was the lowest point total for the week.
Late, yeah.
Sighs, groans, whatever, we got to get out of the way. But final thoughts and predictions, final score predictions for Jags Texans.
I feel a personal obligation to note the forecast high temperature Sunday will be 74 degrees under beautiful sunny skies with low humidity. Open the effing roof! Jaguars 16, Texans 13.
You've been looking at my paper here, Charlie. I got Jags 17, Texans 13. I just, when I saw that they only had the one touchdown, and then I paid attention, that was in the fourth quarter. Texans didn't get into the end zone until the fourth quarter with CJ and Nico and everybody good to go. So, you know, the NFL is unpredictable, but I was not impressed with what I saw with Davis Mills last week. He didn't kill them. He didn't throw a pick six or turn the ball over and lose the game for them, but he did absolutely nothing to really help them win it either.
Yeah, defensive score, maybe Jalen Knoll, big kickoff return. He's had a couple of real big punt returns. Yep. Maybe they need a house job in the return game. I mean, it's just very difficult to see the offense having a good day.
Which is why I have them a point lower than what you guys have. I'm going 19-12 Jags. I'm also scoring this Charlie Palillo 1, Harris County Sports Authority 0 for his great rant about the roof being opened or closed. I don't know if it's the Harris County Sports Authority. I just said that. Make sure that you join us live following the game on Sunday. We're going to be here live on YouTube. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon saying thanks for listening. And as always, go Texans.